Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, May 30th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mklanganya Huye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The family of Itai Dzamara has released the first ever picture said to be that of the abducted Occupy Africa Unity Square leader in captivity.
We managed to verify the image. As a family, we know him, and we also used professional services.
Some Zimbabweans have commended the government for setting up a permanent high court structure in Masvingo.
Masvingo being the fourth largest city, we need really to decentralize things because people are traveling distances to Bulawayo or to Harare to seek services of the high court.
And former senior ZANU-PF official Themba Moliswa appears in court for holding an unsanctioned meeting.
The family of missing political activist Itai Dzamara has for the first time released an image said to be that of the missing Occupy Africa Unity Square leader, which it sourced from some Zimbabwean state security agents allegedly linked to his abduction in Harare almost 15 months ago. Reporter Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Family representative and Itai's brother, Patson Dzamara, told journalists that the image and details and names of his alleged abductors were veiled by some of the people close to his disappearance. Though he could not say whether his brother was dead or alive, Patson said the family sought help from experts to verify the authenticity of the photos. He said the experts noted that they were real. Patson told journalists that indications are that his abductors masked him probably because they were tortured him. Though the family had previously cited state security agents as responsible for Itai's disappearance, Patson said evidence availed to them pointed to some military intelligence operatives as his possible assailants.
I cannot at this juncture state my brother's fate in the hands of these gangsters, but I can categorically inform you that Itai Dzamara was abducted by the military intelligence under the direct instruction and supervision of ZANU-PF.
There was no immediate reaction from the military intelligence over these allegations. Patson, who was flanked by members of Itai's Occupy Africa Unit Square group, showed journalists a purported image of Itai at one of the places where he was kept following his abduction in March last year.
So this is one of the places where Itai was kept. We managed to verify the image. As a family, we know him, and we also used professional services insofar as identifying the person in the image is concerned.
He said the pictures were provided after they asked for proof of life, but he could not tell when and whether Itai was alive.
We do not know why his head is covered like this or why his head was covered like this, but according to the professionals, there's a highly likelihood that they actually tortured him to such an extent that he sustained injuries, head injuries, and because of that, they had to cover the head. And
Dzamara said the family had been furnished with names of Itai's alleged abductors, but could not divulge them as the family was still gathering information and would release more information at the appropriate time. Zimbabwe Republic Police National Spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Cherry Charamba, refused to comment about the Dzamara family press conference, saying she had not seen the purported Itai images. She said the Dzamara family was better positioned to provide more information regarding Itai Dzamara, but Dzamara family lawyer Kenneth Masia said, following the latest information on the missing political activist, they would furnish the courts with the details.
We are going definitely to take this information back to court and also going to approach the authorities who are said to be seized with the investigations of these whereabouts and also force them to investigate and find where Itai is.
despite a court ruling compelling security agents to find Itai Dzamara. The family accuses the police of showing lack of interest in the matter. Dzamara, a journalist turned human rights activist, was allegedly abducted by suspected state security agents in March last year. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu speaks with Shefra Dzamara, Itai's wife, about the photographs in the possession of her family.
Yeah, it's Itai. I identified the foot and even the face. You can actually see that it's Itai.
How about the clothes that he was wearing? Are they the same clothes that he was wearing when he was abducted?
No, they're not the same.
And does this give you hope that whatever happened to Itai will actually come out?
Yeah, this gives me hope that the truth will come out soon.
And tell us about his children. What are they saying about his abduction now?
The children, you can actually say that they miss their father. Every day they talk about their father.
And did you show them the pictures?
No, I didn't. And I'm not going to show them.
Why?
It might disturb them.
That was Shefra Dzamara, wife of abducted Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Some Mashingo residents have welcomed the opening of a permanent high court in the city, saying they will no longer be traveling to Bulawayo and Harare for court cases handled by this arm of the judiciary system. Our correspondent Gandri Maramba attended the official opening ceremony today and filed this report from Mashingo.
One of the residents, Brent Banda, said the move by government was welcome, though it came a bit too late.
Mashingo being the fourth largest city, we need really to decentralize things because people are traveling distances to Bulawayo or to Harare to seek services of the High Court. We feel that it should have been done quite a long time ago because people really needed the services of the High Court. But now, since it's been open today, we applaud the effort and people can access the services of the High Court right here in Mashingo.
Another local resident, Mugovera Makonese, urged government to open more high court structures in most parts of the country and stop focusing on issues that don't add value to people's lives, including the recent 1 million men march organized by the ruling party's youth league to show support for President Robert Mugabe.
The cost of justice must be very minimal to the residents of the whole country. I believe it is a question of misplaced priorities that 36 years after independence, we are celebrating the opening of the High Court in one province.
Speaking at the official opening ceremony, Chief Justice Godfrey Chichigao Siku admitted that the decentralization of the judicial system was long overdue.
I also want to thank the Judicial Service Commission for the job well done. We should have done this a long time ago.
Speaking at the same occasion, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is also the Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Minister, said government would work tirelessly to speed up the decentralization of High Court services to all the provinces.
Decentralization of the High Court to Mashingo is a welcome development.
Mashingo becomes the first province to have a permanent High Court since independence, as such courts were established in Harare and Bulawayo during the colonial era. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mashingo, this is Gandri Maramba.
Temba Mliswa, leader of the Youth Advocacy for Reform and Democracy, who was arrested yesterday with 23 other members of his organization for holding a public meeting deemed illegal by an Esigodini councillor, has been released on bail by a local magistrate. Mliswa, a former ZANU-PF lawmaker, is facing charges of violating some provisions of the Public Order and Security Act, or POSA. Mliswa's lawyer, Lizwe Jamela, tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that the magistrate remanded Mliswa to June 22nd on free bail and ordered him not to interfere with witnesses.
They went to a public place, some restaurant in Ekigodini, to give some refreshment. What is the only thing for them to be safe today? We are made to understand that that is when some people and police back in and they said they were actually having an unsanctioned meeting. So we ended up getting into court, and the minister was actually remanded to the 22nd of June after the long deliberations were done.
What did Mr. Mulinskwa say about this?
Generally, without preempting a lot in terms of his defense, generally denies that, like I mentioned earlier on, they were just having refreshments at a restaurant, and the next thing, being arrested for organizing a public meeting without notifying the regulating authority. And we find that to be very upset and very disturbing. Whereas Mulinskwa, we know who Mulinskwa is, we know his his profile needs not to mention even here. We know who Mukemba Mulinskwa is. The issue now is not about the law, I think, and that's my opinion. The issue is about who Mukemba Mulinskwa is. And what it simply means is that Mukemba Mulinskwa is not supposed to talk to people who number is more than 15. Otherwise, he becomes the captain of the which will be very ridiculous.
That was Lizwe Jamela, attorney for Themba Mliswa, leader of the Youth Advocacy for Reform and Democracy, on the line from Esigodini, Matabeleland South Province, with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
An information technology specialist says Zimbabwe's economy could be in better shape if the country fully exploits modern technologies in doing business. Kumbirai Mkudu, one of the 60 young Zimbabweans taking part in the Mandela Washington Fellowship this year, says leading economies like Kenya and Nigeria are developing because of modern technologies. Mkudu works for the London-headquartered auditing company Ernst & Young in Harare. He will be attached to the Virginia Commonwealth University for the Mandela Washington Fellowship. He tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo he is humbled and excited to be one of the fellows.
I'm excited about the Mandela Washington Fellowship opportunity. I think, first and foremost, because I did apply last year, actually, but, I wasn't successful. So, you know, but I was still dedicated, and I was still wanting to, you know, to still try out for the opportunity. So I then, you know, got selected for this year. So, I am on cloud 9, cloud 10, somewhere up there about it.
And how do you think the Mandela Washington Fellowship will help you?
What I can actually say is the Mandela Washington Fellowship has actually started opening doors into a number of avenues. I can tell you, for instance, that even before we've already gone for the fellowship, I've managed to connect with one of our coordinators who's at the institution where I'll be going. We've managed to connect me with someone who's involved in the arts faculty at the institution. So it's already beginning to open doors.
In terms of IT, where exactly would you say we are as a country, as Zimbabwe?
So in terms of IT, I think as a country, we still to tap into that space because, you know, there's a lot of opportunity that we stand to benefit from IT. There's a lot of technology which has not yet been adopted, in our country. And I think even if you look at e-commerce, for example, we're still quite a long way from really realizing the benefits that e-commerce has to bring. So I think in terms of IT, I think we still need to mature in that space. In the US, for example, there's a lot more reliance on IT. To just put it in summary, I think we still have a lot in terms of realizing the full benefits of IT in our country.
Mandela Washington Fellow and Information Technology Expert Kumbirai Mkudu on the line from Harare with the reporter Ntungameli Nkomo.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Ntungameli Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us tomorrow as we discuss teenage pregnancy, as the recent Zimbabwe Demographic Health Survey shows 1 in 10 adolescent girls giving birth each year. What's your take on this issue?
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
We take a look at regional and international news.
President Barack Obama today hosted a breakfast for military and veteran service groups, as well as senior military leaders at the White House as part of several planned events on Memorial Day, the holiday that honors men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military.
Former Chadian dictator Hessien Habre has been found guilty of atrocities committed during his 8-year rule and sentenced to life in prison.
And more than 20 people are dead in Baghdad after Islamist militants exploded a series of bombs in and around Baghdad today, police officials said. MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai was today discharged from a South African hospital after being detained 1 week for an undisclosed ailment. Tsvangirai, who was supposed to have led a protest in Bulawayo the weekend, did not manage to join his colleagues in the city for the weekend event. In a statement, the MDC said Tsvangirai will be heading back home soon. The party says following the march that was held in Bulawayo at the weekend to show their dismay over the continuing economic decay and related issues, they will hold a similar event in Mutare in August. Last week, the ruling ZANU-PF held its own march to show solidarity with President Robert Mugabe. We turned to independent analyst Zenzele Ndebele on what he makes of the marches.
It shows that there's a crisis within the ZANU-PF, and also there's a crisis within the opposition. There is a crisis within ZANU-PF because if you have one landslide victory with two-thirds majority, there's no need to call people to come and endorse what you are doing. ZANU-PF is calling people to endorse its leadership because they know that the economy is not firing. They know that they have failed to deliver the 2 million jobs that they promised. They know that there's a lot of corruption, and therefore they are trying to divert the attention of the people that, despite the fact that all these things are not going well, despite the fact that you have not fulfilled your promises, you still support us. That's why they need that endorsement. In a proper country, they are supposed to call for a snap election to show that they are really popular. Yet with the opposition also, if you look, there is a crisis of leadership as well within the opposition, because for an opposition party, they cannot sit and look at the country sliding back to 2008, back to an economic crisis. This is the time when the opposition is supposed to defend the people of Zimbabwe. We voted for you, you voted for ZANU-PF. Look at what ZANU-PF is doing.
But they are saying that the marches continue. The next port of call is Mutare, Manicaland. What's your take?
They are already preaching to the converted. They are fishing in a swimming pool because the people in town have never voted for ZANU-PF.
That was independent analyst Zenzele Ndebele. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chioniso Jani, your host on Time to Engage, where the voices of Zimbabwe's youth are heard. Today, we have a Zimbabwean based in South Africa, and she's going to be talking to us about her skills in baking. Hello, Tendai.
Hi, Titi. Thank you for having me.
Tell me how a pharmacist assistant goes to full-time baking.
It's quite infused, actually. I've always been a person who is driven by putting a smile on someone's face, helping someone, changing someone's life, if it's just for the day, for the better. It was quite natural for me to transit from pharmacy to baking because it still does the same thing. I mean, who doesn't want a slice of chocolate cake or carrot cake at the end of the day or something? But after moving to South Africa, I guess I kind of missed the taste of home so much. I started baking. I'm actually self-taught, and I did a lot of research and a lot of YouTube videos. And today I am baking for a wide variety of clients, customers.
Do you think you can sustain with baking?
Oh, yes, I actually think it's a very sustainable business. There's always a demand for cake, and I push the boundaries. I try and cater for gluten-free, for those who have allergies, because ever since moving here, I've noticed that there are a lot of allergies springing up. So we offer dairy-free, gluten-free. We have the health cakes, where it's like a carrot cake or something with apples, something with fruit, old classics, the vanillas and the chocolate cakes.
Are you an entrepreneur or you have a company?
Okay, I have an assistant currently. She comes in to do deliveries or just to help with a few of the decorating. But I'm still the sole baker. I'm trying to move away from that in terms of growing the business.
So tell me about your future plans and why you decided not to do baking in Zimbabwe.
Honestly, in Zimbabwe, I couldn't bake to save my own life. But after coming here, I had a lot of free time in my kitchen. I could do this through the oven and baking. So it's not like I didn't want to do it in Zimbabwe. I actually didn't have the time. And I was focused on my pharmacy career back then.
What opportunities are in South Africa that you cannot get in Zimbabwe?
I would say time. With the economic situation in Zimbabwe, it doesn't leave you with enough time to try and explore some of these things. You're either always trying to make things ends meet, and so it doesn't give you that flexibility. But being here, it's a bit more stable. So, I mean, you've got your income, your normal resources to get into other things. That's the advantage.
What would you like to tell the youth?
If you have enough drive and if you're willing to go, things will fall into place. All I can tell them is don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on the uniqueness of yourself. Yeah, stay on course. You will come across people who will be there for you, who will walk you on this path and achieve what you planned out for. Yeah.
Thank you. And that was Tendai Mushonga. And I am Chiona Sojani, your host for Time to Engage.
Zimbabwe's continuing economic crisis is making it difficult for most ordinary Zimbabweans to access formal health care, with many finding no option but to seek alternative services. Our correspondent Taurai Shava reports from Bulawayo.
A traditional healer at Ulaya's Makokoba market listens attentively as a middle-aged man describes his ailment to him. The man, who cannot be named for reasons of patient confidentiality, reveals that he is suffering from a sexually transmitted infection. He is one of many Zimbabweans who are reverting to consulting traditional healers. The Makokoba market, in one of Bulawayo's oldest high-density suburb of Makokoba, is home to informal craftspeople, traders, as well as traditional healers. Dr. Rudo Gumbo, a physician at a government hospital who was speaking in an individual capacity, acknowledged that the unrelenting economic crisis is not only having a negative impact on the country's health system, but is also affecting ordinary people as it is making it increasingly difficult for them to afford health care. Dr. Gumbo says many locals are now being compelled to either pin their hopes on faith healing in churches or consult traditional healers.
The economic situation does have a massive impact on ordinary people's access to formal health systems, because as we speak, the hospitals do not have the essential drugs. So when someone comes to a hospital, pays $13 to see a doctor, all the doctor can do is write out a prescription, whether a near-death situation, and patient or the relatives of that patient or whoever came with the patient has to go to a pharmacy to buy the necessary drugs. People have reverted to going to churches, the famous Pentecostal churches and the traditional healers, because if you're poor, you cannot afford private hospitals and private practice.
A traditional healer at the Makokoba market, who only chose to be identified as Msipa, said some locals consult him and his colleagues for a wide range of ailments, which include diabetes, hypertension, cancer, and sexually transmitted infections. Another traditional healer, who only identified himself as Jamela, echoed Msipa's sentiments, adding that a number of people who consult him and his colleagues do it in a rather clandestine manner, as they are ashamed of the stigma associated with seeking medical help from traditional healers.
I would say that most of the younger generations now see themselves as church people who have nothing to do with traditional healers. But when things get really tough and they fail to get help in churches and other places, they are sometimes told to go back to their roots and get help from us, traditional healers. We have nothing against church people because they also help in their own way. There are some people who make people pay, and there are others who don't ask for any money. So you will find that there are many who want to be secretive when they come to consult us because they are ashamed to be seen openly doing so. But there are older people who consult us openly because they know that we are rooted in our culture and we are able to assist in many ways.
The 78-year-old Jamela disputes the notion that traditional medicine is steeped in mystery and also denies that the efficacy of traditional medicine is doubtful as a result of not being properly packaged, with the dosages often lacking precise measurement. The Zimbabwe National Traditional Healers Association is a body that was registered in the late 1990s, with some of its objectives being to formalize the work of traditional healers and enable them to complement the formal health sector. In spite of such a move, traditional medicine remains looked down upon. But another traditional healer, Tryphene Ncube, says black Zimbabweans should not be ashamed of traditional healers as they are a reflection of people's culture and identity. She adds that traditional healers are experts in the field, and some types of Western medicine are derived from the herbs that the local healers use.
You can find that in some instances when you go to the hospital and you fail to be cured, some people who are honest can tell you that you can be assisted by traditional healers. We are appealing to people to remember their roots. They should believe that we, as traditional healers, are able to help them in some cases. For instance, you could come to me suffering from cancer, and I can give you some herbs. After a week, I should be able to see some improvement. I should constantly monitor how you are doing so that I can change medication if need be. We are able to help, and I am asking people to remember who they are.
Dr. Gumbo says both traditional and faith healing have risks, as some unscrupulous individuals often lie to desperate people claiming to be able to cure diseases that are known to be incurable. Although this may be true, many hard-pressed Zimbabweans will continue to see the services of both traditional and faith healers as a viable alternative to the formal health system, which is beyond their reach. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
And in sports news, Dynamo's coach Lloyd Mutasa is optimistic that Dimbare will pull out of the relegation zone and fight for the top spot in Zimbabwe's Premier Soccer League. This follows the club's 2-0 defeat to by Highlanders, which left them pegged at 12th position in the 16-team league. Reporter Michael Cariati has more details.
Mutasa says they need to sharpen their striking force, which continues to miss targets on the field of play.
Just need to work on our weaknesses. You could see our conversion is not up there, and that's an area that we should work much on.
Mutasa refuses to accept the much-held view that he does not have quality players capable of leading Dynamos back to the good old days.
So now we have to deal with what we have.
Dynamos fan Farai Kambamura is not a happy man.
I'm not happy about this team. If we are going like this, we are going to be relegated.
Highlanders, on the other hand, are still celebrating the victory as it left them second on the league table. Bosso's Dutch coach Errol Agbay is happy about his team's performance.
I feel everybody, every time when I win, I feel happy. It's, yes, for most people, it's 10 years where we beat them here. But for me, it's every game is one of them.
Dynamos fans, however, will in the meantime forget their sorrows when the Warriors of Zimbabwe take on Uganda in an international friendly at the National Sports Stadium Tuesday. Both teams are using the game to prepare for this week's Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, when Zimbabwe play the Flames of Malawi at the same venue. Uganda are on their way to Botswana to play the Zebras. The Zimbabwe Football Association are charging a dollar for the rest off the ground stand.
Thanks, Michael. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Remember, Studio 7 Live Talk. We are opening the mic for your thoughts. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mklanganya Huye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.